Ms. Costner.
Good afternoon, your honors. May it please the court. My name is Lisa Costner, and I'm here today representing the appellant Bobby John Cabido. In 2019, Mr. Cabido was charged with and pled guilty to possession of an unregistered firearm, specifically a homemade silencer. In the pre-sentence report, the terrorism enhancement was applied pursuant to 3A1.4 of the sentencing guidelines, which increased Mr. Cabido's advisory guideline range from a base offense level of 18 to 30 and his criminal history category from 1 to 6. The pre-sentence report also applied a four-level increase for possession of a silencer in connection with another felony offense. The pre-sentence report, the felony offense that the pre-sentence report stated was felony terroristic threats. That enhancement was pursuant to 2K2.1B6B of the sentencing guidelines. Mr. Cabido objected to both of those enhancements, and both were overruled by the district court. The court at sentence.
Now, your client entered a guilty plea, right?
That's correct, Your Honor. He did.
And he doesn't challenge the guilty plea.
Your Honor, and
he doesn't challenge the guilty plea. He challenges these two enhancements. That's right.
That's correct, Your Honor. I did not represent Mr. Cabido in the lower court, but there was no motion filed to set aside that guilty plea that I saw on the record and no hearing. So he proceeded forward to sentencing after pleading guilty.
Right. No issue. There's no issue about the validity of the guilty plea. The only issue is sentencing, and he challenges how Judge Tilley handled these two enhancements.
Yes, Your Honor, that is correct.
And in the final analysis, what Judge Tilley gave him, what, 5 years?
That is correct. He faced a statutory maximum of 120 months. Judge Tilley did vary downward and sentenced him to 6 months at active time.
Right, he could have got 10 years.
Yes, Your Honor, that is correct. He could have.
And the terrorism incident would have been an attack on the Terry Sanford Courthouse in Raleigh.
Yes, Your Honor, the government said at sentencing was that possession of the silencer was committed to further a violation of 18 U.S. Code 1363, which was attempt or conspiracy to injure or destroy property within the special maritime and territorial jurisdiction of the United States, and that was the Terry Sanford federal building in Raleigh.
Okay. Go ahead. I'm sorry. I just want to get that background in here.
Thank you, Your Honor. This terrorism enhancement has a huge impact on a defendant's sentence. Had it not been applied to Mr. Cabido, his advisory guideline range would have been 18. Of course, he would have gotten a three-level deduction for acceptance of responsibility. And without the four-level increase for possessing the silencer in connection with another felony, his criminal history category would have been 1, and his advisory range would have been 18 to 24 months, a pretty significant decrease from the statutory maximum that he faced of 120 months. 3.4, the sentencing guideline, I'm sorry, I thought I had a question.
You're fading out some for me, Ms. Cosner. Get closer to the mic or something?
Yes, I'll try my best. Is this better?
It's better.
Okay. So if the offense is a felony that involved or was intended to promote a federal crime of terrorism, that's when the guideline score is increased 12 levels or to a level 32, whichever is higher. And then the criminal history category of the defendant goes automatically to level 6. We can find the definition for federal crime of terrorism by referring to 18 U.S. Code 2332BG5. And what that says is that a federal crime of terrorism must be an offense that is calculated to influence or affect the conduct of government by intimidation or coercion, or to retaliate against government conduct, and is a violation of certain enumerated statutes. And at sentencing, as I said before, the government contended that that statute was 18 U.S. Code 1363. In our brief, we raised several issues with respect to whether that the terrorism enhancement should have been applied. And we argued that, first of all, Mr. Cabido could not have been convicted of an attempt to violate, of conspiracy to violate 18 U.S. Code 1363. The only possible co-conspirator would have been the undercover government agent, and as this court has held, a government agent participating in a sting operation is not a co-conspirator. That Mr. Cabido could not have been convicted of attempt to violate 18 U.S. Code 1363, that there's just the government couldn't prove or not sufficiently that what Mr. Cabido did was to take substantial steps towards completion of the crime. Mr. Cabido certainly engaged in a lot of phone conversation talking about the crime and what he, you know, his thoughts about it, but there's no evidence that he took any substantial steps towards completion of the crime. And I would say that what his conversation sounded like was more along the lines of trying to impress this undercover agent. If you look at, go ahead. Judge King, did you want to have a question?
No, ma'am.
Sorry, they light up sometimes.
The silencer.
The possession of the silencer?
Yeah.
Well, certainly in his conversations, he discusses the silencer and what he, you know, what he would do with the silencer. But as far as the rest of the conversations, Judge Gregory, he talks about, there's never any conversation about a specific plan, a day, a time, how, you know, how he's going to get there.
Do you need that? Do you need that as an act in furtherance?
Well, I would say that he at least, there at least needs to be some evidence that goes beyond just the possession of this silencer, that to show that he in fact had the intent to commit this act.
He's trying to encourage people to do it, wasn't he?
I would disagree. I think he's talking to the agent. He does say something along the lines of, you know, it would be better to have two people, but they never go so far as to actually put together a real plan to do this. And he never.
You're not citing the law. The law doesn't have to be a precise plan. I mean, he did more than just possess the silencer, right? That was in conjunction with shooting at the buildings, wasn't that? A silencer would be easier to perfect that, right?
He did talk about that.
And you're saying that's not enough? Here, this is not an indictment. This is an enhancement that only has to be proven by preponderance of the evidence.
I'm sorry.
Right? Correct?
Yes, preponderance of the evidence. That's exactly correct. But I would characterize a lot of what he said as hyperbole. I mean, he's bragging, boasting, but he's doing very little.
That's your spin on it. And if it was a trial, maybe you would convince the jury it was. But is that the standard for an enhancement? I mean, my goodness, we enhance people's standard and the people not even in the courtroom at all. And they talk about the quantities of drug you sold and people never even come to court. And now you're saying for this case, we have to have a full blown, would be close to a trial with jury instructions and everything you're talking about, because now you said it was just blustering, it was hyperbole, he didn't really mean this. I mean, I understand you're his counsel, you're doing a good job for his side, but is that enough to take this out of a crime that involved an act of terrorism for an enhancement?
Well, I think when you look at what he did say and what he didn't say and contrast that. So, you know, he talks about, he sends a Google map, for example, to this agent. Well, anybody could go and you know, search Google Map and do that.
He act in furtherance, didn't it?
I mean, if a Google Map, anybody, I would say.
Anybody can send the address of the bank you're going to rob. We use those as act in furtherance. Rent the car, put gas in it, make arrangements. Those are acts in furtherance. We do it all the time. I mean, it's nothing special about this case that now all of a sudden, oh my goodness, we can't look at these things. How so?
Well, I would argue that what he was doing was engaging in a lot of talk, and he was bragging and trying to make.
But he pled guilty, Ms. Koster. He pled guilty to all this. He pled guilty, and Judge Tilley reviewed the facts and found by preponderance of the evidence that both these enhancements applied, and then he cut him a break. He reduced the sentence by 50%. He cut him a break. He got a sentencing break, a very substantial sentencing break for the type of offenses that he'd been convicted of.
I can't disagree that a 50% reduction in an advisory guideline sentence is not a substantial break. I definitely agree with that, but I think it's a different issue than whether or not this terrorism enhancement should have applied. And if it wasn't applied, his guideline range would have been considerably lower even than the 60 months that he got from Judge Tilley. So what I would say is that if you look at the conversations and the times, you know, this begins in February of 2018 with the conversation where, you know, Mr. Cabido does engage in a lot of talk. Then there is some conversation in March, and then radio silence for a pretty good while. And all the conversation, it appears, is initiated, at least it's starting in July, by the agent contacting Mr. Cabido to talk about this silencer and Mr. Cabido's plans. And around that time, Mr. Cabido was saying, you know, I don't think I can do this. I think I think you can interpret that as Mr. Cabido withdrawing in a way, trying to save face. I can't do this. I'm not, you know, I'm older. I've got some ailments. And then ultimately, 2 months later, he withdraws completely. And I think, too, if you look at the timeline, the government waits a month before they even execute a search warrant at Mr. Cabido's house. So clearly, they're not too worried that Mr. Cabido is heading over to the Terry Sanford building to shoot, or else they would have done something about it long before October 25th of 2018. And then when they do search, they don't find a firearm. They find the two silencers, but they don't find anything that Mr. Cabido could attach the silencers to do anything. And so I think that you can consider all of that in deciding whether or not there was sufficient evidence of Mr. Cabido's intent to apply both the terrorism enhancement and the four levels of possession of the firearm in conjunction with the felony.
Ms. Costner, can I ask you about the terrorism enhancement and this issue about the Terry Sanford federal building and whether or not it was within the special territorial jurisdiction of the United States? So your client did plead guilty, but I don't think he admitted that as part of his plea, right?
That's correct. That was not a part of a possession of the homemade silence.
So I mean, you raise this point, and I'm just wondering, how do you suggest that the government should have been able to prove this up? And could the court simply have taken judicial notice of that fact? And can't we do that today?
Well, first of all, if you look at the record, the government proffers this 18, you know, U.S. Code 1363 as the supporting offense to support the terrorism enhancement. So they put that forward. And it would be my argument that at that point, if they're going to contend that supports it, then they also at least should have some obligation to put on some evidence that the Terry Sanford building fits within that definition of special maritime and territorial jurisdiction. And that wasn't done. Now, whether the court could have taken judicial notice, Probably, and whether this court could, probably. But that didn't happen in the lower court. There was no, that issue was not raised, and it was in the court made no findings regarding whether or not that part of that statute applied. I see I'm over my time. Unless there are other questions, I will stop.
All right. Thank you, Ms. Cosman. Ms. Wade.
Thank you. May it please the court. The district court properly applied both sentencing enhancements in this case because of the defendant's intent. And that intent was to use his homemade silencers in a planned attack on the Terry Sanford building. And I'd like to start by addressing the terrorism enhancement. And the terrorism enhancement applies when the offense involves or was intended to promote a federal crime of terrorism. And the federal crime of terrorism, that's a defined term. It's set out in a separate statute. There's the two components. There's the specific intent component, and then there's the requirement that there be one of several enumerated statutes involved. But when we're looking at the text of the terrorism enhancement itself, there's two separate prongs here. There's the involved prong, and there's the intended to promote prong. And it appears from my research that this court has only formally addressed the involved prong, but the Second Circuit, the 11th Circuit, and the Sixth Circuit have all addressed this second prong, the intended to promote prong, and explain that that prong is broader than the involved prong, and it applies when the defendant promotes or encourages or has the goal of trying to help bring into being a federal crime of terrorism. And those courts explain that this part of the enhancement can apply even if the defendant wasn't convicted of a federal crime of terrorism, even if he couldn't have been convicted of a federal crime of terrorism. And I think the 11th Circuit in United States versus Manti spells that out. They say there that this part of the enhancement doesn't hinge on the defendant's ability to be able to carry out a federal crime of terrorism, and it doesn't hinge on his degree of separation from a federal crime of terrorism. It hinges on his motive and his intent. And when we look at the record here, we have an undisputed factual record, and the record is full of facts that lead us to show that the defendant's intent was to use these silencers in the planned attack. It was more than just talk. He set up a meeting with this confidential human source. They met on three separate occasions where he discussed the plans. And each time he reaffirmed his intent. He said, "I still believe in what needs to be done." He was angry at the government. He wanted to retaliate against the government. He said, "I think the NSA is spying on everybody and everything." And then he launches into this plan, and he has a detailed plan. He talks about using a common round to help avoid detection. He talks about wiping fingerprints off of the ammunition so that it can't be traced. He talks about putting film over his license plate so when they drive away, their security cameras can't capture the license plate. And then he follows up by sending a picture of the Terry Sanford Federal Building and sending a document describing his grievances against the United States government. And even when he gets to the point where he walks away from working with that particular human, confidential human source, he still says, "I believe in what needs to be done." He still reaffirms his intent to carry out this plan. And then when the search warrant is executed at his residence, they find the homemade silencers, the silencers that he had talked about with the source that could be used to help avoid detection, to help mask the sound of the gunfire because he wanted to fire into this Terry Sanford Federal Building. So the record is replete with indications that his intent was to promote a federal crime of terrorism. And as was discussed in the position paper and at sentencing, the federal crime of terrorism at issue here is 18 U.S.C. 1363, which makes it a crime to willfully or maliciously destroy or injure property within the jurisdiction of the United States. And to your question, Judge Diaz, about the lack of factual finding about whether the Terry Sanford Federal Building is within the jurisdiction of the United States, two points to that. Even if we assume that for some reason that the Terry Sanford Building is not in the jurisdiction, of the United States, we still win and this enhancement still applies. And that is because factual impossibility wouldn't negate the defendant's intent. The defendant wanted to carry out an attack on a federal building. That's clear in his conversations with the confidential human source. So even, like I said, if the building turns out not to be a federal building, his intent was still to attack a federal building. So that issue is not—
But can't we, this is Judge King, can't we readily take judicial notice that the Terry Sanford federal building and courthouse satisfies that requirement?
Yes, Judge King, that's correct. And I believe we cited that case in our brief that said that you can take judicial notice of that fact. I wanted to offer this alternative argument as well, but
when I was prosecutor, we used to get the judge to take judicial notice of those kinds of things, and where the district was confines of the Eastern District of North Carolina and all of those things, matter related to geography, basically.
Yes, that's correct. I agree that this court can take judicial notice of that fact. And this case we cited in our brief, this court took judicial notice of the fact that the Blue Ridge Parkway is within the jurisdiction of the United States. And that same analysis does apply here, that this court could take judicial notice of that fact. It also states in the PSR that the Terry Sanford Federal Building is in the jurisdiction.
I'm sorry, can I ask you about that issue, the Terry Sanford Building? Because, the case that you cited with respect to the Blue Ridge Parkway is a little bit different. Any court, would have to take judicial notice that the federal government accepted jurisdiction over the building, in this case, the courthouse, by filing a notice of acceptance with the governor of the state or in some other manner prescribed by the laws of the state where the land is situated. So how would we know that that actually happened in this case?
Your Honor, there would probably have to be, either we would have to submit something at this stage or there would have to be something submitted at the district court stage. That information is concedingly not in the record. It does say in the PSR that the Terry Sanford Federal Building is within the jurisdiction of the United States, and that fact was not objected to at sentencing when the district court adopted the PSR. And then I would also like to go back to my argument about factual impossibility and how that doesn't negate the defendant's intent. And his intent was to attack a federal building. He was angry with the NSA, he was angry with the FBI, the ATF, and he wanted to retaliate by attacking this federal building. He even said at one point, evil is coming.
So you say it's enough if he thought it was a federal building and intended to attack it?
That's correct, Your Honor. So for example, if the defendant wanted to—
And he must have admitted that at the guilty plea, that much of it, right?
Your Honor, I don't know if it says in the factual basis that was used at the guilty.
Okay, maybe you don't. All right, I don't know if that's in here either, but anyway.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you.
Does the PSR state that it's a federal building?
The last page of the PSR, when probation responds to the defendant's initial objections, it does say at that point that the Terry Sanford Federal Building is within the jurisdiction of the United States. And
Was that objected to?
It wasn't objected to at the sentencing hearing. Was that your question?
Right, that's my question. It was not, correct?
Correct.
All right.
So this court is under plain error review at this stage. But just to belabor my point on the factual impossibility for another minute, if his plan was to shoot at the president, but he accidentally shot at me thinking that I was the president, that wouldn't negate his intent. His intent was still to shoot at the president. And I think that applies here because he said that his plan was to attack a federal building. So even if the Terry Sanford Federal Building is not a federal building, he still had the intent to try to encourage or bring about this federal crime of terrorism. So for those reasons, this enhancement was properly applied by the district court. And if there's no further questions, I'd like to talk briefly about the firearms enhancement. So when we look at the firearms enhancement under section 2K2.1B6B, there's also two separate provisions embedded within that enhancement. When we look at the second provision, it applies if the defendant possessed or transferred a firearm with the knowledge, intent, or reason to believe that it would be used in connection with another felony offense. So the operative words there, the would be, show that this can apply even to felony offenses that have not necessarily occurred. And we filed a letter, a 28J letter, excuse me, on this point, and cited a case from the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals as persuasive, United States versus Jemison. And in that case, the Ninth Circuit examined that this part of the provision and explained this enhancement applies even to felony offenses that haven't occurred. And they gave as an example a bank robbery. If the defendant purchases a firearm and he intends to use that firearm in a bank robbery, even if he hasn't picked out the particular bank that he's going to rob or the particular day that he's going to do it, if he's formed the firm intent to use that gun in a bank robbery, then the enhancement applies. And that's persuasive authority. And that situation applies here. The defendant had the homemade silencers and he planned to use them in this planned attack that is a separate felony. So for that reason, this enhancement also applies. And if this court has no further questions, I would concede my time and rest on the brief and respectfully request that the court affirm the lower court's decision.
Thank you, counsel. Ms. Cosner, you have some time reserved.
Thank you, Your Honor. Just a couple of points. First of all, with respect to the pre-sentence report, whether there was an objection to the pre-sentence report saying that the federal building in Raleigh is in the territorial jurisdiction of the United States, that was a response by the probation officer to defendant's objection. So for the defendant to object to the response to the objections, that's just not something that normally would happen, and it's not in the report itself. So I would just contend that is part and parcel of the defendant's objections to the pre-sentence report, and that Mr. Attorney should not have had to also object to the response to the objections. With respect to the argument concerning the increase for possession of the firearm in conjunction with another felony offense, raising the case of Ms. Wade raised the U.S. versus, I think it's Jimenez. Interestingly enough, if you read the case, what happened in that case is the defendant confessed a firearm and said he was going to go off rainbow on some police officer or law enforcement officers. And in looking at the defendant's comments, the court in that case determined that what he did and said was not sufficient to support that fourth enhancement. I would argue that Mr. Cabito's comments are more along those lines than evidence of an intent or evidence of this felony offense, and that he that as I said before, his comments were hyperbole, that he actually, other than possessing this the silencer, and he pled guilty to, the only evidence about anything else that he wanted to do or with respect to that building was what he said to this person on the phone. And in that way, he is more like the defendant in the case cited by Ms. Wade. And I would just ask that the court reverse the decision regarding these sentencing enhancements and send it back for a resentencing. If the court has any other questions, I'm happy to answer them. But if not,
Ms. Cosner, did I understand you to say the distinction is that he was on the phone? You're saying that it would be different if he had been face to face with him?
Oh, no, I'm sorry. There were meetings face to face, text messages. I apologize. I meant more that it was conversation and communication, not evidence of any further actions that he took to somehow further some desire to shoot into the federal building. Harry Sanford Building.
All right. Thank you. All right, counsel, I know, Ms. Costner, you're a court opponent. I want to thank you, particularly on behalf of the Fourth Circuit. We depend on lawyers like yourself to take these cases, and as well you've done and perform quite ably, and we appreciate that. We thank you so much. Ms. Wade, also, we thank you for your able representation in the United States. With that, we can, we'll have to extend a virtual handshake to you and make do with that the best in terms of our tradition, but please know we appreciate your arguments, and thank you so much, and we hope that you'll both be safe and stay well.